according to its author, Wolfram, to both cloak and reveal, like parables. Let me keep going. All of this, I'm done, the end of the quote. All of this is rather mundane in its way, even pedestrian. Not to me. And the grail would appear to be an innocuous enough affair. Or spit. But later, when Parzival's hermit uncle expounds on the grail, it becomes decidedly more powerful. Oh, I got my beard. I got some of my beard. I don't want an ash to fall on my beard and set it on fire. But later, when Parzival's... You know what's going to happen on this show? I'll be a host with a flaming face some night. Decidedly mundane, even pedestrian. An innocuous enough affair. That's the way these writers would describe a flaming beard. But later, when Parzival's hermit uncle expounds on the grail, it becomes decidedly more powerful. My boy and you, after a lengthy disquisition, which includes strands of flagrantly Gnostic thought, the hermit describes the grail thus. Quote. He's going to describe the grail now. Quote. You want to hear the description?
Yes, sir.
All you got to say to me is, I'll see you in the King's House Sunday. That makes me happy. No. All you got to say is, I'll see you in the King's House Sunday with an offering. That makes me happier. And if you can't, say, I'll send a double offering because I can't. This Sunday, everybody that can't come to King's House is penalized with a double offering. Get on a telephone. Under those terms, you can stay home. No, make it a triple offering, because three is divine manifestation. Get on a telephone. As long as I want to know, you're going to call me for 5 to 7 minutes. And if you call, I'll continue. Otherwise, I ain't continuing. Got it? In order to do the job of straightening out people that have been damaged by this book, we have to go like we're going. And then we'll get down to where they start talking about Christ. And they'll provide a backdrop for me to give one of the finest apologetics in the classic meaning of that word for Christianity I've had a chance to do since I've been here. This book doesn't worry anybody. I've already pointed out a few little cracks that are starting in the wall, haven't I? Now, they think they're going to find the secret in the Holy Grail romances. And the one that they're looking at now is Wolfram von Eschenbach's. After a lengthy disquisition, Parzival's hermit uncle expounds on the grail, including strands of flagrantly Gnostic thought. The hermit describes the grail thusly. Quote, the hermit describes the grail thus. Quote, well, I know that many brave knights dwell with the grail at Bootsalvesh. Now, we've got the magical cornucopia at Bootsalvesh. Always when they ride out, as they often do, it is to seek adventure. They do so for their sins, these Templars, whether their reward be defeat or victory. A valiant host lives there, and I will tell you how they are sustained. They live from a stone of purest kind. If you do not know it, it shall here be named to you. It is called Lapset Axillus. By the power of that stone, the phoenix burns to ashes, but the ashes give him life again. Thus does the phoenix molt and change its plumage, which afterward is bright and shining and as lovely as before. There never was a human so ill, but that if he one day sees that stone, he cannot die within the week that follows. And in looks, he will not fade. His appearance will stay the same, be it maid or man, as on the day he saw the stone, the same as when the best years of his life began. And though he should see the stone for 200 years, it will never change, save that his hair might perhaps turn gray. Such power does the stone give a man that flesh and bones are at once made young again. The stone is also called the Grail. End of quote. You're bored with this. I am. They're taking too long to tell this. I like things to be done in 30 minutes and finished. If it weren't for these fellows here, I'd already finished the pyramid and demonology and Atlantis, Bermuda Triangle, and the first 4 centuries of Christian doctrine, how we got our Bible, and the mysteries of the stars. The lost tribes and the relationship to the Dogon people. These guys are to blame. They can't ever finish anything. According to Wolfram, then, the Grail is a stone of some kind. But such a definition of the Grail is far more provocative than satisfying. Scholars have suggested a number of interpretations. I wish they'd name some of these scholars. Scholars have suggested a number of interpretations. They put a footnote, normally named one. One is scholar, not scholars. Scholars have suggested a number of interpretations of the phrase Lapset, Axillus, or Axillus, all of which are more or less plausible. Lapset, Axillus, Lapset, Axillus might be a corruption of Lapis ex Silus, or Lapis ex Kylus, which means stone from the heavens. It might also be a corruption of Lapset ex Kylus. The only difference there is between Lapis and Lapset, which means it fell from the heavens. Or it might be a corruption of Lapis Lapsus ex Calus, a stone fallen from the heaven. Or finally, it might be a corruption of Lapis Elixir, the fabulous philosopher's stone of alchemy. Or it might be corruption of Lapdog. By the way, remember Khan? Remember Khan? Edward Genghis Khan, descended from the guardians of the Han Dynasty Chinese emperors from 200 BC, the rarest dogs in the world. Remember when I had old wrinkled bull neck Khan here one night? And a little independent blonde Ming toy. Now, Ming Toy is Christine's dog, you know. A director, among other things. My secretary. And Khan is mine. Montoy and Kahn produced Five Puppets. Four girls and one male. They are either 3 or 4 days old. Look like little wrinkled thumbs. Now, they're the world's rarest dogs. Plus, fact, those two dogs are famous. You remember when Neiman Marcus had in their catalog the gift for those that have everything? Some little Shar-Pei's. There's Shar-Pei's, world's rarest dog. Guards the emperors. And I always wonder, because they're not as big, for example, as Dobermans or German Shepherds, but they got those square jaws like a pit bull, boy, and they grab you, they can break bones. But I often wondered, you know, why the emperors of China would use them. Until I started paying attention to their hearing. They're bred for the finest hearing. Those two little dogs can hear something outside and start barking before the dogs outside hear it. But anyway, Five Puppies. Now, Ming Toy, the blonde female, is Chris's. Kahn. I mean, black as midnight. He built like a tank. Flat-footed, he jumps and can go to the top of that table and does look like it's effortless. He's really something. He's the only dog I got that's bitten two people. And he's ahead of them all. I was told somebody, I don't even know who they are or what in the world they're doing, threatened they were going to serve the good doctor on television, live television on Sunday. You know, some arrogant little peanut wart is determined to do that on Sunday. Well, we'll see, won't we? You know, there are agents for service process around. You don't interrupt live services. You don't haul them off to jail. Wimpo. Anyway, I may bring Kahn to preach with me Sunday. When he grabs hold, you can expect to spend the rest of your life with two jaws around your leg. But anyway, they had five puppies. Five puppies. Now, you figure it out for yourself. I mean, you know. What's fact is fact. Four of the puppies are black, and one of them is blonde. That means four of them are mine, and one of them is Chris's. Yeah. Now, some of you got left out on the shepherds. You don't buy these dogs cheap. You know, Shar-Pei's cost $1,500 to $3,000, no matter what kind of scrawny, wrinkled up mess they might be. They're the world's rarest dog. You buy one owned by a bureaucrat, which would have to canker his lineage. And they cost $1,500 to $3,000 a piece. So there ain't nobody buying these five puppies for nothing. Now, four of them's mine. One of them is Chris's. But that one has the lineage of my dog in it. Only thing is, I like Ming Toy, too. She likes me better than anybody else, too. She's a smart dog. Now, I'm taking bids for my four Shar-Pei's. And half half interest in Chris's. If they're black, they're all mine. If they're blonde, they're half mine. And since I get half of what Chris's pup goes for, she's going to have to sell it high, too. I don't take a small price for my half. So I got five Shar-Pei's now. Had eight people try to get my German Shepherds, and there were only three. And they've already been dispersed. They ain't the Holy Grail, but if you want to buy some Shar-Pei's for Christmas presents, you can't have them for Christmas because they got to be weaned and go through their shots and get bigger than a thumb. But to you that missed out on the German Shepherds, these are great house dogs, by the way. They don't have undercoats. They don't shed the way some dogs do, and they're almost odorless. Really, I figured out since I owned them why the emperors of China liked them. They're great dogs. I may bring in my book about Shar-Pei's and educate you here one night. But first come, first serve, but bid line forms on the telephone later. If they're answering the phone, you can get ahead of them. The four black ones are mine, and the blonde is half mine. One male, four females, and the blonde is a female. One black male and three black males are mine. The blonde female's half mine. And if Ming Toy ever mates with anyone else, certainly the passage quoted, like the whole of Wolfram's poem, for that matter, be careful when you take the details down on those orders, too. Because the date and time on the thing gives the first chance. You don't get them just because you put your name in, either. I'm particular. These dogs have to have right kinds of masters. They're the dogs for the elite. Not some junkyard dog. Certainly the passage quoted, like the whole of Wolfram's poem, don't start for less money than you'd have to pay if you went to anybody to get one. My dogs are special. They've been taught by me. They're theologically sound. They pray over their food. Certainly the passage quoted, like the whole of Wolfram's poem for that matter, is laden with alchemical symbolism. The phoenix, for example, is established alchemical shorthand for resurrection or rebirth. Now, I've already told before I joined people 25 minutes ago, Wolfram made it clear that the Grail romance that he wrote was intended to be, though he didn't use this analogy, like the parables that Jesus told. To those that could find the key and read the symbolism, like the painting of Nicholas Poussin, Shepherds of Arcadia, it conveyed a message. But to those not initiated, it is deliberately cloaking the message, not to be understood except for the few who are supposed to know it. The phoenix, it is pretty generally accepted as alchemical, mystical shorthand for resurrection or rebirth. In medieval icons, it is an emblem of the dying and resurrected Jesus. Many icons that have the phoenix on them, that's the symbol it intends to convey. If the phoenix is indeed somehow representative of Jesus, Wolfram is implicitly associating him with a stone. Such an association is, of course, hardly unique. There is Peter, Pierre, or stone in French, the stone or rock on which Jesus establishes his church, And as we've discovered, to them it was a discovery, Jesus in the New Testament explicitly equates himself with the keystone, not really the cornerstone. Neglected by the builders, and that's important. Cornerstone, see how they've sort of trickily changed it from cornerstone to keystone. Keystone and cornerstone are not the same. Cornerstone is very important because there's only one kind of building that has a cornerstone, that is the chief cornerstone. And that's a pyramid. The keystone of the temple, the Rock of Zion, because it was founded on this rock, there was supposedly a royal tradition descended from Godfrey de Bouillon that was equal to the reigning dynasties of Europe. I don't find any trouble with a stone being related to Christ. Paul made the same relationship. And God used the stone in the Old Testament from which the water gushed forth as the type of Christ, the shadow of things yet to come, which is Christ. They're making such a big deal out of the simple. In the passage immediately following, the one quoted, Wolfram links the grail specifically with the crucifixion. That's what we want to get to. See, they're trying to weave their little special theories in. I'm only interested in what Wolfram had to say. Wolfram links the grail specifically with the crucifixion, and through the symbol of the dove with the Magdalene. Quote, this very day there comes to it, that is the grail, a message wherein lies its greatest power. Today is Good Friday, and they await there a dove winging down from heaven. It brings a small white wafer and leaves it on the stone. Then, shining white, the dove soars up to heaven again. Always on Good Friday, it brings to the stone what I have just told you, and from that the stone derives whatever good fragrances of drink and food there are on earth, like to the perfection of paradise. I mean, all things the earth may bear. And further, the stone provides whatever game lives beneath the heavens, whether it flies or runs or swims. Thus, to the knightly brotherhood does the power of the grail give sustenance. End quote. Now you know why so few people understand it. It's not really to be read for its literal meaning. And it can get real boring and meaningless unless you know the key. The grail in these romances, the implication is a symbol for something else. Something that had to be hidden. A secret that to the few who knew it gave them great power. That's what Wolfram is implying. In addition to its other extraordinary attributes, the grail in Wolfram's poem would almost seem to possess a certain sentience. It has the capacity to call individuals into its service. To call them, that is, in an active sense. For example, quote, shall I continue?
Yes, sir.
I lost some time on the dogs, but they're worth losing time on. I want my dogs to have good homes. Otherwise, I'll keep them all. Bunch of little Edward Genghis Khans and Edie Genghis Khans. If you want to get in line, make your bids. Make your bids. Put your money where your mouth is. And you want me to continue with this grail? Quote, here now. I'll continue if you beg me a little. Pray. I want to know and get on the telephone. You're going to take 7 minutes to talk to me, or I don't go any further. Reviewing it, page 269. I'm getting down to the part where they get bad and I get good. Wolfram von Eschenbach, Parseval, his grail story. In addition to its other extraordinary attributes, the grail, in Wolfram's poem, would almost seem to possess a certain sentience. It has the capacity to call individuals into its service. To call them, that is, in an active sense. Quote, like this. You put the pedigree in your computer so they can get mail and their kids. And put it in a binder. Hear now how those called to the grail are made known. Now we're getting close. Good part. On the stone, around the edge, appear letters inscribed, giving the name and lineage of each one, maid or boy, who is to take this blessed journey. No one needs to rub out the inscription, for once he has read the name, it fades away before his eyes. All those now grown to maturity came there as children. Blessed is the mother who bore a child destined to do service there. Poor and rich alike rejoice if their child is summoned to join the company. They are brought there from many lands. From sinful shame, they are more protected than others and receive good reward in heaven. When life dies for them here, they are given perfection there. End quote. Now, if you know the key, the mistake of many grail searchers is not to understand that it both hides and reveals. It's like a message sent by code. If you don't know the code, you say, who wrote this dumb story? It's stupid. But if you know the code. If the Grail's guardians are Templars, its actual custodians would appear to be members of a specific family. This family seems to possess numerous collateral branches, some of which, their identity often unknown even to themselves, are scattered about the world. But other members of the family inhabit the Grail Castle, the Moon Silvesh, fairly obviously linked with the legendary Cathar Castle of Mont Sobot, which at least one writer has identified as Mont Sigur. Remember that? Within Moon Silvesh dwell a number of enigmatic figures. There is the Grail's actual keeper and bearer, the chosen response. The response, the Schwa. And there is, of course, Anfortas, the Fisher King and Lord of the Grail Castle, who is wounded in the genitals and unable to procreate, or alternatively, to die. What a way to live. As in Christian Grail romance, Anfortas, for Wolfram, is Parzival's uncle. And when at the end of the poem the curse is lifted, and Anfortas can at last die, not procreate, but die, Parzival becomes heir to the Grail Castle. The Grail or the Grail family calls certain individuals into its service from the outside world, individuals who must be initiated into some sort of mystery. At the same time, it sends its trained servitors out into the world to perform actions on its behalf, and sometimes to occupy a throne. For the Grail, apparently, possesses the power to create kings. Quote, maidens are appointed to care for the Grail. That was God's decree. And these maidens performed their service before it. The Grail selects only noble company. So I like that about it. Knights, devout and good, are chosen to guard it. The coming of the high stars brings this people great sorrow, young and old alike. God's anger at them has lasted all too long. When shall they ever say yes to joy? I will tell you something more, whose truth you may well believe. A twofold chance is often theirs. They both give and receive profit. They receive young children there, of noble lineage and beautiful. And if anywhere a land loses its lord, if the people there acknowledge the hand of God and seek a new lord, they are granted one from the company of the Grail. They must treat him with courtesy, for the blessing of God protects him. Don't you wish you knew the key to what it is they're really trying to communicate? End of quote. I'm warning you. From the above passage, it would seem that at some point in the past, the Grail family somehow incurred God's wrath. The allusion to God's anger at them echoes numerous medieval statements about the Jews. It also echoes the title of a mysterious book associated with Nicholas Flamel. We met him before. The name of the book, The Sacred Book of Abraham the Jew, Prince, Priest, Levite, Astrologer, and Philosopher, to that tribe of Jews who by the wrath of God were dispersed among the Gauls. And Flegetanus, who Wolfram says wrote the original account of the Grail, is said to have or be descended from Solomon. Could the Grail family possibly be of Judaic origin, these authors ask? You don't care, do you?
Yes, sir.
Whatever the curse formerly visited upon the Grail family, it has unquestionably come by Parzival's time to enjoy divine favor and a great deal of power as well. And yet it is rigorously enjoined, at least in certain respects, to secrecy about its identity. Now, this secret society always communicates in strange symbols, like the cutting of the elm. Here's another quote. The men of the Grail family God sends forth secretly. The maidens leave openly. Thus, the maids are sent out openly from the Grail, and the men in secret, that they may have children who will in turn one day enter the service of the Grail, and serving enhance its company. How's the maid going out openly and the man secretly contribute to having kids? Oh, I got it. God can, still quoting, God can teach them how to do this. End of quote. Women of the Grail family, then, when they intermarry with the outside world, may disclose their pedigree and identity. The men, however, must keep this information scrupulously concealed. So much so, in fact, that they may not even allow question about their origins. The point, apparently, is a crucial one, for Wolfram returns to it most emphatically at the very end of the poem. Quote, upon the Grail it is now found written that any Templar whom God's hand appointed master over foreign people should forbid the asking of his name or race, and that he should help them to their rights. If the question is asked of him, they shall have his help no longer. End of quote. From this, of course, derives the dilemma of Lohengrin, Parzival's son, who, when queried on his origin, must abandon his wife and children and retire into the seclusion from whence he came. But why should such stringent secrecy be required? What skeleton in the closet, so to speak, might conceivably dictate it? You don't want to know, do you?
Yes, sir.
I don't believe it. I don't think you're interested. What skeleton in the closet, so to speak, might conceivably dictate this secrecy? If the Grail family were, in fact, Let me continue.
Yes, sir.
They want to know. Beg me a little. Tell me you'll be in the King's House Sunday. Keep the bids coming in. Keep the bids coming in. You better bid more for the blacks than the blonde, because they're all mine. What skeleton in the closet, so to speak, might conceivably dictate the secrecy attached to the Grail family? If the Grail family were, in fact, I'm reading from Holy Blood, Holy Grail, Bajet, Lee, and Lincoln, we're reviewing it. If the Grail family were, in fact, of Judaic origin, that, for the age in which Wolfram was writing, might constitute a possible explanation. And such an explanation gains at least some credence from the Lohengrin story. For there are many variants to the Lohengrin story, and Lohengrin is not always identified with the same name. In some versions, he's called Helios, implying the sun. In other versions, he's called Eli or Eli, an unmistakably Judaic name. In Robert de Boron's romance and in the Perceval's, Perceval is of Judaic lineage, the holy lineage of Joseph of Arimathea. In Wolfram's poem, the one we're looking at now, this status, so far as Perceval is concerned, would seem to be incidental. True, Parzival is the nephew of the wounded Fisher King and thus related by blood to the Grail family. And though he does not marry into the Grail family, he is in fact already married. He still inherits the Grail castle and becomes its new lord, Parzival, that is. But for Wolfram, the protagonist's pedigree would seem to be less important than the means whereby he proves himself worthy of it. In short, he must conform to certain criteria dictated by the blood he carries in his veins. And this emphasis would clearly seem to indicate the importance Wolfram ascribes to that blood. There is no question. I'm boring you.
No, sir.
The dogs were fun. This too strung out. I hate people that can't finish something. There is no question.